This is me. My name is Arun, Arun Data. And my other panel members is Ms. Victoria Jackson and Professor James Srimar. And what we'll be talking today is from the informatics part, that how we are framing, developing the framework from the informatics point of view to deal with the childhood obesity. So after our talk, maybe we can share some of our experience, and that's why I opened up that discussion, that at what from what point of view you are actually working on the childhood obesity, because this is a very complex disease, and from the interdisciplinary point of view, there are so many aspects that the childhood obesity and its research actually takes place. I don't have to remind some of you who are working on the childhood obesity that how it has become a daunting issue in US. In fact, in last year, I was in China for a meeting, and somebody from Australia, he presented a very alarming statistics that almost all countries have the problem when it comes to the fitness test that is indirectly or directly related to the obesity. And he showed that all the countries have the similar problem of the obesity, not necessarily childhood obesity, but the obesity as such, except Japan. And then I asked why it is so. Then somebody told me that if you are in a government service in Japan, and if you are obese, you'll be losing your job. I don't know whether it is true or not, but that's what I heard. So Flegel actually did a research, and he showed in 30 years the increase of the obesity actually increased from the 14.5%, almost more than double. The economic impact, of course, staggering. In 2008 alone, is like $147 billion, and that doesn't include the cost associated with the man hours. That means once you are pretty much disabled from the obesity, you cannot work, and that cost is not associated. So everybody knows that in 2010, President Obama finally developed a task force on the childhood obesity, which has become a really national concern. And so every state, they have started understanding that a screening or surveillance program should be in place for effective surveillance, prevention, and treatment. And I'll come to those points again. One advantage in the surveillance program from the obesity is the BMI is easy to measure, is the height and weight. Of course, very much scientific research point of view, how accurate it is, we are not going to debate that. It is very easy to measure. So the American Academy of Pediatrics, they recommended that BMI should be used for in the school to screen the height and weight of the children. The project that we are running, both Professor Jim Rimmer and I, are associated with the school health program that Ms. Victoria Jackson actually runs. So she will narrate, she will describe what the problem she is facing from the school health program and how we became useful for bringing some of the solutions. And with that, then I'll mention about the informatics program that we are developing to bring the solution. And Professor Jean Rimmer also mentioned that how the childhood obesity and disability, he is actually bringing a solution to her program. So with that, I like to invite Ms. Jackson. So I hope.
Thank you, Arun. As Arun said, I'm Vicki Jackson, the School Health Program Coordinator for the Department of Human Services in Illinois. And I'm here to talk to you, really set the stage for the rest of the discussion today about the challenges that we have faced in collecting and analyzing data for the school health program. Oops, I went the wrong way. I had to use the others opposite direction than I'm used to. Okay, the school health program really has three components: technical assistance, coordinated school health projects, and the school health center project. And each of these has specific data needs and challenges that we face. School health technical assistance is a service we provide for parents, administrators, school nurses, and other agencies. We operate educational programs primarily for school health personnel, attended by more than 1,400 school health personnel across the state each year. Have an email list we maintain for 1,700 school health personnel. We send out notices of changes in public health law, educational resources, grant opportunities, things like that. We maintain a website, as most state school health programs do. Develop manuals, in particular on management of asthma and diabetes in schools, and then handle multiple phone and email inquiries about issues specific to children and health issues that they're facing in school. The current status for technical assistance: schools supply only aggregate data to the state Board of Education on admission requirements for school enrollment. How many are in compliance with immunization requirements? How many have received the necessary physical examinations, which we require at kindergarten, second, and sixth grade? And how many have had the required eye examination or dental examination? We lack data on specific health problems. We certainly don't collect any data on overweight and obesity. And what is collected at the local level varies considerably on local resources, based on local resources, and there is no centralized reporting of any of the data that might be collected beyond the aggregate numbers that I refer to. We have a need to collect data, especially the wealth of data that is required to be reported on the school physical form. I've put a few copies of that form around in the room so that you can see, looking at both sides. We're collecting immunization record, health history, reports of physical examination, and importantly, height, weight, and BMI information. None of that is required to be reported to the state. We also do not have any information reported on a state level as to the credentials of the providers of health services in the schools, their qualifications, nor do we have reporting that would inform us of their educational needs as far as management of that. And I know some of this discussion goes beyond the obesity data that we have available, but we do not collect or utilize, but it's a pervasive problem. There are 2.3 million school-age children in Illinois, and as you would know then, we could have a wealth of data provided. The second part of my responsibilities is the coordinated school health program. Through this project, county health departments implement the CDC coordinated school health model, which addresses all of the areas there. Each health department identifies local issues and then implements activities using these various components to address the identified issues. And you can see that comprehensive health education, nutrition, and physical education or physical activity are important parts of that project. All of these projects engage in activities to improve nutrition, increase exercise, and related health education. They're all implementing what's called the CATCH curriculum, which is a K-5 curriculum out of Texas that addresses the school nutrition environment, physical activity within the classroom, and health education within the classroom. And I've given you, if you want more specific information about that, the link there. But we lack ability to collect any data related to this. until now. And Arun will talk more about those specifics. As I said, currently they're required only to report to me in narrative format what are the issues they've identified, what is their plan for addressing those, the timeline, the activities, and their evaluation plan and reports of their evaluation. But this isn't collected electronically, so we have no ability to analyze the data. Anecdotally, they're telling me this program has resulted in decreased BMI, decreased discipline referrals, because the children have this period of activity, and improved nutrition, and increased class attention, and in some cases class performance. But again, anecdotal report only. We have not been able to measure any of that. Of course, needs for this project, state and local level data collection, reporting, collecting, ability to analyze, evaluate performance, and take a look at outcome measures related to overweight and obesity. The third part of my responsibility is the school-based health centers. This is a project I've taken over within the last 5 years. Services provided through the school-based health centers include, as you might expect, routine medical care, immunizations, physical exams, mental health counseling, nutrition services, any variety of things that you would see at a normal clinic. We have 59 such health centers in Illinois. They are located in impoverished areas throughout the state. 39 of those receive some funding from us. They're sponsored by a variety of agencies. It might be the school itself that is sponsoring this clinic. It might be a university. It might be a major health organization in the state that's involved. Varies tremendously. And as you might guess, the resources that they have for data collection will vary tremendously depending on who they're associated with. The data was, until 2007, self-reported. Paper and pencil. They would send me aggregate numbers of students seen, a written report entered into clinical, into an Excel spreadsheet by my secretary. And what we found very quickly is this was inaccurate and contradictory data of little value to us in looking at their performance. We then moved to trying to collect data electronically. We collected a variety of things, demographic information, diagnosis and procedure codes, through a comma delimited text file, and we imported it into an Access database. Problem now being, state of Illinois is no longer going to support an Access database, and so our support for our data collection is really diminishing. We have limited ability using that database to analyze the data using multiple variables. The clinics use more than 9 different electronic records. We required for years from the onset of the program 15 years ago that they use something called Clinical Fusion, which is a database developed in Colorado for school-based health center use. It does collect basic demographics and diagnosis and procedure codes, but it is not an electronic health record. And then other electronic health records emerging that their parent organizations are wanting them to use, GE Centricity, Gemini, Cerner, Epic, NextGen, any variety of programs. In some cases, the school health center staff has to enter data into Clinical Fusion to report to us, into another system for billing purposes, and into a third system to report to their parent organization. A lot of wasted time as it was currently operating. We provide a lot of service through those school health centers, 86,900 students enrolled, 31,000 users in the last year for 77,000 and some medical visits, additional dental and mental health visits. So we have a lot of visits, a lot of data available if we can access this. We also place an emphasis through those school health centers on risk assessment, each regular clinic user is required that they conduct this assessment for the child. These are the multiple areas addressed through that risk assessment, including, of course, in relation to obesity, disordered nutrition and disordered eating, and physical inactivity. This results of this risk assessment, whether or not there are abnormal findings, are documented in the Clinical Fusion software, and we would have great opportunity to look, for instance, at what problem was identified. Did they institute necessary anticipatory guidance, treatment, or referral related to that problem? What action did they take? But currently, up till this point, we have not had ability to assess that. Again, a wealth of data collected by the school health centers, demographics, diagnosis, procedure codes, provider codes, results of that risk assessment, referrals, height, weight, and BMI data. So we have the data if we can get to it and use it. Again, the needs for all three programs, reporting, analysis of the data, evaluating it, for any wealth of health issues, because we do have the data available in many cases, and in particular related to overweight and obesity. What we are hoping to achieve and are finding we are achieving through our development of the program that Arun will talk more to you about is improved monitoring, ability to measure outcomes, significant opportunities for research, disease-specific research related to the risk behaviors that students are engaging in, a lot of information there about overweight, obesity, and comorbidities. And of course, we're always interested in support data to support the advocacy for our program. I first became connected to Arun through a project that I helped with the Illinois Department of Public Health. They were attempting to collect data from the school physical, that form that I've put in the audience, and take a look at the wealth of information that's available there. Initial projects, they tried to use a scannable form. They had data entry into an Excel spreadsheet by the school nurse. She'd look at that form and enter the data into a sheet, and then submit that spreadsheet, all with inaccuracies and lack of very time-consuming. So Arun is going to explain to you how CHOICE then was further developed and expanded to address the data needs in all three of the programs that I'm connected with. And I've given my contact information there. At this time, we'll turn the discussion over to Jim Remmer, who is going to have further information on the project.
Okay. Should we hold up for questions? Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and that's a nice segue into the work that we're doing in obviously informatics being a very important part of trying to bridge this enormous gap in health promotion for youth with disabilities. As you know, we have about 5 to 6 million children in this country today who have disabilities, participate in special ed, but very few of them are engaged in any kind of health promotion initiative. A lot of times, you know, there are programs, small programs, that'll start with families in trying to encourage the family member or another child, sister, brother, to assist this youth with a disability and participating in health promotion. But the families are very often struggling with many other aspects of their lives. They, a child with a disability requires significantly more medical services, for example. It's difficult getting wheelchairs. Certain types of assistive technologies may take months, if not years, to acquire. So these families who have children with disabilities, whether it's attention deficit disorder, or someone with spina bifida or cerebral palsy, have significant struggles daily with trying to even address issues associated with the survival component of that child's life, let alone now having someone come in and say, you know, obesity is a problem in children, with disabilities, and your child may be susceptible to that. So that's not even on their minds. They're more concerned with other things. So what we're trying to do is use informatics to approach this in a very smooth and efficient way, so it doesn't cause great difficulty on the caregiver or the child to participate in some health-promoting behavior. So basically, just very quickly show you a study that was published in 2009 by Chen et al., and it shows clearly that the rate of obesity, the non-disabled rate, is 12.2%, and every one of these disability categories shows that it's significantly higher in children with disabilities. The other problem with the whole area of obesity, and this is one reason why we don't see much research going on at NIH looking at addressing obesity in children with disabilities. In fact, we did an analysis of what they call the NIH Reporter, which publishes all of the federally funded NIH dollars in any given year. You can get online and put in NIH Reporter, and then you can search by terms: obesity, disability, children. And what you come up with is we did this in 2010. You came up with, I believe there were three trials on obesity reduction in children with disabilities, and like 180 on non-disabled children. And all 180 of those programs had no relationship or interest in recruiting children with disabilities. So unfortunately, what you see in the research literature is that disability is an exclusion criteria. In other words, if they have a disability, whether it's a child or an adult, they can't participate in the study, because obviously the study investigator is trying to weed out or eliminate any potential noise that may occur by having people with disabilities involved in the intervention. So that's a real problem in our society today. It used to be like that with women years ago. You know, women were always excluded, and now we've got a lot more research. It's the same way today with people with disabilities. So we don't have a lot of money to run randomized controlled trials, and so we have recently received a new grant from the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research.
Your passcode has been confirmed.
Oh,
if you need technical assistance during your call, please press star followed by zero. You are the first caller to this conference. Please wait while others join. After the tone, please state your name.
That's interesting. Okay, I don't know. Hello? Anybody there? Okay, so I don't know how familiar you are.
There are one parties in conference, including you.
This could be part of, you know, maybe they're conferencing people in. Who knows? Anyway, the CDC has actually come out with 24 strategies. I don't know how many of you are aware of these, but CDC scoured the literature, and they've got this very sophisticated group called the Community Preventive Services Task Force, and they're charged with going out and looking at what is collected in the area of systematic reviews, and then coming to some consensus that a certain strategy is considered evidence-based. Somebody smile. Anybody part of that group? No? Okay. Because it is here in Atlanta. They fly people in from all over the country, but the work is done by the internal staff at the CDC. So it's a very cool mechanism and operation that we're kind of trying to fly off the backs of, and I'll show you that in a minute. But there are 24 strategies right now in this country today that are considered evidence-based. 13, I believe, of these are, is it 13 or 14? No, it's 13 are considered to be in the area of physical activity, and I believe 11 are in nutrition. So I'm not going to go into each of these, but I just wanted to give you an idea of what one example would be. Strategies to encourage physical activity or limit sedentary activity among children and youth is one of the strategies. And they're broken out by actually two strategies. I'm sorry, that's the general topic. Strategy 12 is communities should require physical education in schools, evidence-based. Okay, and 13 is communities should increase the amount of physical activity in PE. It's funny that second one came up, because I just heard from our new mayor, Rahm Emanuel, who is part of the president's cabinet, and now he's our great mayor of Chicago, and he said that the school day is going to increase next year. So it's going to increase significantly, and there was a whole article in the Chicago Tribune about it. And part of where the time is going to go is not only to the academic component, but also they're going to increase physical education time. So remember, he was part of the president's cabinet. The president's very interested in obesity and the first lady. Rahm is now back in the city, and you know, he's certainly not going to leave physical activity out, which is good for the city of Chicago. Now, that might be Chicago and not the state. Okay, she's smiling because she's part of the state program. This is probably the Chicago public school systems, which almost operates like Quebec does in Canada. it's got its own set of actions. So I won't go through this in detail, but this is the setup that we have to try to come up with our own expert work group and panel to adapt what already exists for children with disabilities. So our concept is we don't have the resources to develop standalone RCTs just looking at youth with disabilities or families, so we've got to adapt what's out there. But in order to adapt something and have it have an element of credibility where people, professionals, will want to consider using it, like in Vicky's program, it has to be done in a sophisticated manner. So again, this is our process where we start with the setup phase, and we have people sign non-disclosure forms that they don't have any self-serving interest if there are recommendations made on how to adapt programs. Then we get into our adaptation phase, which includes our staff internally, the expert work group, and the expert panel. And then we go through a whole series of, we solicitate or we request adaptations on the web and the portal through our informatics structure, which you'll see in a moment. We do internal literature searches or systematic reviews. And then the other part of this is what we so often forget, and I hope if you remember just a full few bullets from this presentation today, remember the program that Vicky and Arun are doing is fascinating, and we're part of that as well. But also remember that when you do anything in health promotion, please try to remember to include someone who has knowledge of disability, because so often they're left out of the room when we discuss this, and then when the program is actually rolled out in the community, guess what? It has no element of accessibility, and now we're going back and retrofitting it. So we've got to think of this in a more a priori way, that if we're going to look at disability, and by the way, disability is a wonderful model to look at if you're building in informatics, because as you know, there are a lot of issues with accessible websites and the internet that people with disabilities can assist you with. There are many people out there who have disabilities who have expertise in making websites accessible for the hearing impaired, for the blind, and for people with cognitive disabilities. And then we go through, after we collect this data, we go through a periodic review and evaluation through our adaptations expert work group. And then at the end of the year, we have a consensus development meeting, similar to what CDC does, and we finalize the adaptations that were created. And that's the finalization phase. So how is this all done? Well, we wrote the grant in such a way that we consider this to be a project that will obtain knowledge from the world. And by doing that, we have what we call a ubiquitous website, which you'll see, where our expert panel members can contribute to the portal, what we're calling our online web portal. CDC has funded a number of community transformation projects throughout the country. There's like $600 or $700 million right now going into community transformation to build in those 24 evidence-based strategies into local communities. I only covered physical activity and nutrition. The other big incentive today is the smoking reduction. So there's a lot of activity going on. From sort of a Dr. Frieden, who's the director of the CDC, has more of a top-down approach where you start to look at policy change before you get into the unit of analysis of the family unit. So he's very big on funding programs that can show that they can make an impact on policy change in the community, smoking, you know, reduction or elimination programs, increasing trails and walkways and things of this nature. So our portal is called the 24acorns.org, and 24 stands for the CDC 24 Obesity Prevention Strategies, and ACORNS refers to Adapting Community-Based Obesity Reduction National Strategies. So this is a website that will be probably launched in the next couple of days. It's sort of in the beta testing process right now. And if you go to this particular button here, this is the way the screen will look, different strategy categories based on each of these 24 CDC strategies. You can click here, Strategies to Encourage Physical Activity or Limit Sedentary Activity. And if you want to see what the adaptations have been that we currently have on the website, you could click on and see that. Or you can go to the next page and put in what you feel for that particular strategy, which is to encourage physical activity, you would want to select the disability group, their age, the adaptation domain, context, gender, race, ethnicity, and experience, you know, where you're coming from, so we get an idea of what people what type of people are contributing. So this is the sort of the screen where you begin. If you know of an adaptation, you can come to the website anywhere from in the world and actually develop or create one or revise one that's already listed on the portal in order to allow us to get this integrated knowledge translation framework to the community. So here's just an example. My son, I won't read it in detail, but this is a woman who has a son with autism, and he always goes to the library during physical education class. They just don't understand how to integrate or include a child with autism into the PE class, so he gets exempt. She writes that she was complaining to the principal. The principal advised the teacher to go to a workshop on inclusion and in physical education, came back. Teacher had more knowledge, and now the child, instead of going to library class, is actually going to class, PE class. So these are the kind of examples. Now, once we get that up and running, the next stage of this, which I'll go through very briefly because Arun's work this is going to be tied into the work that he's doing with his information structure and portal. But this is what we're referring to as the personalized online weight management and exercise response system. We start in with adults with developmental disabilities, but we can use it for, we're going to be using it for children as well. We have a model called the ICANN, which is the Interactive Coaching Assistance Network. It basically includes a custom developed web application, which again deals with this technologically infrastructure to support the wellness coaches. And that wellness coach could be anyone, for example, a parent, another child in the neighborhood, a school teacher, special education teacher. And it supports also the family or the participant during the self-management program. And the whole idea is to provide a way to collect data. As Vicki said, it's so critical to at least see what is going on in real time in that family unit, and then to be able to take that data and customize it in real time using sophisticated algorithms to match and mix where that parent or child may be in their community setting. So there are two pieces that we're working on. One is, you know, getting an appraisal of where the family member is and the child, and the other piece of it is doing some community mapping to identify what exists in that community that that child may tap into in order to address issues of health, wellness, and obesity. So we start with a health appraisal profile, which leads to a needs assessment, and then from the needs assessment, we look at the health status of the child, including secondary health conditions they may have, functional ability, barriers to health, current activity level, their readiness to change, their self-efficacy, and we also have a slot working on healthcare utilization, because that's obviously a very important area in terms of hopefully reducing the amount of healthcare they need. Then we have our ICANN tool, which is the application tool to make this work, and then there's a personalized health promotion intervention, which is developed strictly, again, for the caregiver and the child with the disability. And then that goes into, is there improved health status? If the answer is no, we recustomize the program because we know that it's not going to work unless it's actually tailored specifically to what that family member and child needs. And then finally it ends up with, once we do see success, we reduce the support and we provide self-management activities and community resources. But the nice thing about this instrument and the work you'll hear from Arun is that once you collect this data, even though you may see bumps in improvement over 12, 13 months or even a school year, as we all know, things change across time, and having a system, an informatics system that will keep this individual in our system for years and years to come will allow us to start to do the kind of research that we need longitudinally to see where these changes occur. So let's say, for example, somebody's in the system for 2, 3, 4 years, and all of a sudden we're starting to see a lack of interaction with the system, and we query the caregiver, and we find out the child is in the hospital for a pressure ulcer, we could intervene immediately to avoid a second pressure ulcer, hopefully from occurring. So tracking the health across time is what informatics will allow us to do in the future. Now, the way the system works, again, is you get a referral from a rehab service provider, or anyone for that matter. The telecoach, which is a part of our national center, which I'll end with in a few minutes, will actually help to develop the initial plan. We set up realistic goals in nutrition and activity. The telecoach, which is located at our center at the University of Illinois at Chicago, actually communicates via email or phone with the caregiver or the child. If it's an adolescent, for example, they could interact with the individual versus the family member. And then we try to come up with a variety of choices after we map out the health appraisal of the child and what may exist in the community. So the key here is that we know that in order for this to work, the community has to be used in a way that they become the change agent. Because anything we do from teaching the parent how to have the child eat better or providing the parent with maybe some Wii video games that the child might do for a few weeks will only have limited utility. The key element here is to get the community to support the needs of people with disabilities. There are not a large number of youth with disabilities in communities, but in the small number that do exist, we have to figure out a way to get the community to support their needs and interests. And then finally, the telecoach and the assisting coach, who could be somebody in that community, can revise the plan and modify it accordingly. So we have a national head coach that is located in Chicago, and then that head coach works with what we're calling the assistant coach anywhere in the world to facilitate the inclusion of that child into the community. Does that make sense? So we've got an on-the-ground coach, and we've got a remote telecoach who coaches the person. And again, that could be a school district calling us up and saying, I have a child with spina bifida. I don't know where to go, but I've got a special education teacher who would love to become your assistant coach. And all we need in that assistant coach is just the intuition to be able to provide what we're recommending. It might be, do you have public transportation that is accessible in your community? That's one question. Do you have any kind of voluntary support system that will, you know, work with getting a child to a gym or a fitness center or taking them shopping on any given day?
I'm sorry, I might have missed it, but how is this national? Is this a pilot somewhere? I mean, who has access to be able to use this to contact?
Okay. Is it okay if I get to the end? Because that's the kind of the bang at the end. Okay. Who are you? Maybe I'm in the wrong presentation. What city are you getting? Okay. So just see. Yeah, you'll have an opportunity to react to this. So, this is the system, and I won't go into that because of time. But I'll just give you 7 or 8 screenshots. So the screenshots will look like here's the participant profile. This is what we call the health risk appraisal. Here you can see on the bottom. And they put in information. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we have to know, such as, is the child using a power wheelchair or a manual wheelchair? Or does the child use crutches? Or maybe, you know, Canadian crutches or a cane? What type of balance does the child have? You know, does he eat poorly? Does he have any limitations in using his arms or his legs? Which many of them will say yes. Are there any accommodating cognitive issues? You know, because many children, for example, with cerebral palsy will also have some level of learning disabilities or intellectual disabilities. Once we get that information, then we can begin to customize the program with these algorithms that we've been creating for the last year and a half, 2 years. So we've got participant demographics. Then we also list the barriers. What are the barriers that either the child or the youth could put into the system or the caregiver? And they check it off. So this person puts in they've had an injury, they lack coordination, and they're very self-conscious about exercising in front of other people. And we hear that a lot, by the way, from adults with disabilities, that they don't like to go to fitness centers because they're in a chair or they're overweight or their balance is not so good or it takes them a little longer to get it in and out of these resistance training machines or, you know, and they just don't feel comfortable in the locker room getting dressed in front of other people, especially if they've lost a limb or they're visually impaired or they're hearing impaired or they're physically impaired. You know, there are a lot of self-conscious issues that people with disabilities struggle with on a day-to-day basis. And when you put them in an environment like physical activity where you completely expose the body, it becomes a very self-conscious type of activity for people to participate in. And then we have charts, so you get to see the chart across time. And again, the people looking at this don't necessarily need to be the caregiver. This could be the special ed teacher. It could be the school nurse. It could be the director of a special ed program looking at the 300 kids in special ed. This could be part of the child's individualized educational plan. And the services all coming from the central center, which I'll describe at the end of the presentation, which is our national center. So a lot of the resources are not being usurped at the local community level, but the resources are at the national level in our office. So when I dreamt about this 14 years ago, I said we need a paperless national information center where people with disabilities, caregivers, schools can work together. And 14 years later, you know, we basically are paperless. But we thought about that way before the internet was popular and people were still producing these health promotion textbooks, which became outdated in 2 or 3 years. Now everything is online. It's archived. If the CATS program changes, we go in and we modify it. Monitoring calories and calorie intake, participant call log, so you can, when you're talking to the parent or the caregiver or you're not reaching someone, you can immediately connect to the special ed teacher. So let's say I set up this program where I'm going to coach someone at home, right? And all of a sudden, 2, 3, 4 weeks, no response. And that happens a lot. You know, they're not picking up the phone. You get into voicemail. I could send a message, whoever's in this system, to the doctor, to the physical medicine specialist, to the physical therapist, to the school nurse, to the special education director, whoever's part of that network of working on this particular situation with this family could be part of the system, and I could send a note saying, hey, you know, we don't know what's going on here, but the person is not responding to the system and to text messages or internet emails or whatever we do. And then, of course, we archive it. So finally, to get to your question, where is all this housed? www.nicpad.org is probably where we'll have this portal when it's finally ready to be publicly launched place, which we refer to again as the Powers. The Powers will integrate with what you'll hear from Dr. Data in a few minutes with his system, because again, our system is strictly to build in adaptations and specific directions for the world of disability. And then once that's created, Dr. Data's system could pull that into their system, and when someone comes through the program that has a disability, they would immediately be fed through our portal and receive the adaptation services community mapping for that particular child. So we're a very small, tiny group, but we work very, very hard up here at our National Center. We have about 15 full-time staff and about 20 graduate students. We get a lot of work out of grad students, you know. 20 hours a week, they'll do anything for a grad assistantship. So we have you know, a lot of students who work with us, but we're building this center. We've had it up and running now for 12 years. There's lots of content in there and information that you'll see related to disability and health. And it's broken out, and this is my last slide. I got one funding slide, but this is the last slide. So we work a lot on e-learning. We have a whole program on how we can bring in people who have no disability knowledge, physical education teachers, school health nurses, families. That platform is currently underway to provide webinars and even coursework. We can offer credit. If you are a special education director in a co-op or a school district and you contacted us, we could set up continuing education units through our university and then have your teachers or staff or administrators take this 12-hour course on disability. And disability has changed so much in the last 20 years that it's really important for professionals to understand what the term means, because, you know, we used to think of disability as this very specific group of people who use wheelchairs. And today, disability cuts across, you know, an enormous age range of people. The fastest growing segment of the disability population are people who have chronic diseases. As we know, diabetes will cause many people to become blind, to lose a limb, to have significant mobility disabilities. Obesity is leading to many types of different orthopedic disabilities, heart disease, stroke, arthritis. These are all disabling conditions. So when you think of disability, that's the other bullet that I would like you to leave with in my part of the presentation. Think of it as it's going to affect all of us at some point in our lives, either through our family members who have a disability. Today I had to leave our little conversation when I went upstairs to call my 90-year-old mother. She has to take a teaspoon of her medicine, which is by the cabinet. Then she has to take her 3 pills, her blood pressure pill, her memory pill, and her calcium pill, which is over by the Blessed Virgin Mary statue over in the corner, everything that you tell her. And then she had to, the air conditioning was on, and it got cold in Chicago, so I have to teach her how to. So it's this whole instructional thing. She has a disability. So once we begin to learn how to do this, and we use informatics to increase the ubiquitousness of this, you know, all of society will benefit. I always use the example of, you know, years ago people used to complain about making curb cuts. Oh, why do we have to have curb cuts? Which were primarily made because of, you know, people with disabilities who use wheelchairs. Today, you see mothers with strollers using curb cuts. They love them. You see seniors who can't lift their one leg up. They love them. People who roll bags. So disability in general, if you start with that framework, then everyone else in that community will probably have access to whatever services or programs you're using. So we have mobile applications. We the virtual coaching. We've got very robust industry partnerships to help us. Interactive directories where people can put in feedback about a gym or a health club that they liked or didn't like, so we could see what's successful, what fails. At some point, we're going to have, you know, it's kind of like food service, you know, where you'll get the credit or the stars on what you like. Today, when I go shopping online, I don't look at what the store is telling me about a product. I look at what people said about that product. Did they like it? Did it fit right? Was it the right size, the wrong size? So it's going to be the same thing with health promotion, and it already is starting to occur. And then, of course, we have this online health promotion program called the 14 Weeks to a Healthier You, where we set up everything for the individual, and they get this 14-week online program with a virtual coach. And that's already up and running. You can, if you know of someone with a disability who would like to sign up for it, they could sign up at their discretion. So, in conclusion, I was so delighted when Dr. Dada invited me to present today because disability is, as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, it's always the part that gets left off. But because of the work that Ms. Jackson and Dr. Dada are doing, they have, you know, they were gracious enough to say, you know, we need to think about disability as we build our informatics system. You're the expert in disability, and we'll interface at some point. So keep building your system while we build ours, and then we'll try the two together to make sure we've got a successful, integrated public health, health promotion, integrated informatics system. And then you can take the rest. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so let me tell you, give you some idea about what I stand. My background is biology, especially the molecular biology. I also have the educational background in computer science. So in our university, I teach computer science and do the research primarily on the health informatics. Especially obesity has become such a problem. So at this point, I like to open it up like a classroom setup, especially when Jim will be leaving. His flight is at 1:30, so 11:30 has to run. And I was asking Jim that if the audience actually ask any question where your expertise is needed, should I SMS it? And he'll be giving me the answer. So let me open it up as a classroom setup. So I'll go through, and whenever you have any question, whether it is for me, for Ms. Jackson, or especially for Jim, feel free to ask, because Jim may not be available after 11:30. Okay. So Ms. Jackson has actually gave you some idea that what the school health program means and what kind of problem it is. And so the concept that actually came out is the school health informatics program to solve some of the problems that she had. And what are the problems, how we are actually solving it, I'll go through in details. Now, how many of you have the informatics background? Okay, great. I was not expecting that. So yes, for some of you who have the informatics background, I can go in greater details. But some of you who doesn't have that may feel bored. So somewhere I'll go at the macro level, somewhere I'll go to the micro level. The childhood obesity informatics system, the concept actually came as she mentioned that she was running a program and they were trying to do some surveillance on the childhood obesity in Illinois. And at that point, we already had, I'm from California, and they are from Illinois. So you see that the world is very small. So they contacted me. At that point, I had one program running in National City, which is a greater part of the San Diego. So they have seen how we are actually using the informatics program to solve some of the solution at the community level. I belong to the Community Research Institute, so this is one of my major mission and vision, that how to work with the community, try to find out the problems they have and how we can actually bring the solution so that they can become more effective. So at the end of my presentation, if you feel that there is something that will be able to help, feel free. You know, don't think about any funding or anything, because the funding comes at the end in any way if we do the quality work, right? So feel free, and if our tools or technology are useful to your benefit, we'll be expanding that to your system. So so that's the way we started. And this is the new interface, Fontet interface. It's called My Choice. Although we started with the childhood obesity, but people realize that the obesity doesn't start at certain point again. You know, at one fine morning you woke up and you see that you are obese. It doesn't work that way. So it actually works. Actually, from the when the child was in the mother's womb. So mother's health is very much important, how the child development will actually take place and whether ultimately that child will develop the obesity or not. So although we started with just the height and weight, but now we are expanding, and my calculation is almost like 900 data points. And I'll come to that, why we need a kind of infrastructure that I'm going to present. So ultimately this system will provide you the information about the mother, and in relation to the mother's health, also the child health. And then in the long run, you will be able to find out what are the different factors that actually contributed for this particular child, they developed the obesity. So in terms of the research, that's very much valuable to the researcher, trying to find out that the environmental factors, socioeconomic factors, behaviors, and also the genetic. Now, in terms of the genetic, I'll come back to that again, is, of course, our genes, our proteins, you know, do whatever we do, but the environmental factors, the microbiomes, I don't know how many of you have heard the term microbiome. In the St. Louis, when they started sequencing, they realized 90% of the sequencing are coming from the microbiome. So that means, if we can take an electron microscope on our body, we'll see almost 90% of the cells are actually coming from the microbes. Another 10% are coming from what our cells are. So we are embedded in the microbiomes, and the ecological system of the microbiome actually gives the shape of whether we'll be healthy or we'll be diseased condition. So we need to have those kind of information in the system to get a very good overview that how a child is prone to develop the obesity. Does it make sense? Okay, now is the informatics part. How many of you are using the electronic medical record at this point? Some form of electronic medical record. How many of you are using the electronic health record system? So the question is, what is the difference between the electronic medical record and the electronic health record? Anybody knows? Okay. The main difference between the electronic medical record and the electronic health record, electronic medical record is the provider-centric. That means if you are working for a public health department or a clinic or a hospital, the record on a patient actually remains in that provider. Electronic health record changes the scenario. It is the patient-centric. That means I am, as a patient, will have all the data with me, and I'll decide what information good to whom. When I'll be sending the data to the dentist, not necessarily I have to send all the data to the dentist. I'll be sending some of the informations that are relevant to the dentist to work on my dental research. If you want to think in that term, so which are going to be effective from 2014, because last year in March 2010, President Obama signed that health reform bill. So ultimately, you as a patient will have the greater control over your health data. Now, we are now very much mobile Today we are in Illinois, tomorrow will be California, someday we'll be in Colorado. So at this point, probably I don't have to explain that if you move from one state to another state, you cannot have the access to your data. So the same things, the blood test, the colonoscopy, and all those things are repeated once you move from one state to another state. But in the electronic health record system, those redundancy will not be there. So the repetition of the same thing will not be there. So once you go there, you have the data with you available through the internet. And this is the informatics infrastructure that will be in place. And we have already started that. So this is a portal user interface. That means the website I showed you just two slides ago. So that was the portal interface. And we are developing the different kinds of technology and tools as a modules, and these are called the portlet. And we are just plugging in once it is developed. So like, for example, Gene's program on the NCPad or NICPad, so that's as a portal. So we'll just plug in so that whenever all the information so that Gene has that can interact with our system. The portal is very much well defined as a gateway. That means, you know, the informations are almost everywhere. So if you like to get an information, you try to type the Google, but Google now gives almost like 1 million hits. So how to get the relevant information that you like to get that? And that's why the scientists, the computer scientists, they are developing the portal for specific research. Like, for example, obesity informatics system, or for the disability, they are developing. So in that portal, that will be the gateway for getting the information that are very much specific for the obesity and the related information. So it's a cheetah system. In the middleware is all the database services, grids, resources, and those who are familiar with the computer technology, you can ask me freely and I can explain why it is or what it is. Now, how many of you are familiar with the grid computing, grid infrastructure? Okay, great. So National Science Foundation, some people like Larry Smart, they actually came up with the idea in the early 80s that we cannot do some of the computing things using our own computer. We need a better, robust computer. So they came up with the idea of supercomputers. So we have 11 supercomputers throughout the nation in this country. And a couple of years ago, National Science Foundation, they thought that, you know, one supercomputer sitting on in one place, so why don't we just network all the supercomputers? So think about it. We have got almost like a teraflop amount of power, computing power, by networking with all the supercomputers. And National Science Foundation gave the name TeraGrid. And what they have done now, they have given the access to those TeraGrid to all the universities and the institutions, those who actually like to use the grid computing power. And from my university, I have become the champion to reach to people like, you know, to our faculties, to our students, as well as people like you, who like to use the Getter computing power, which are not available to your desktop or laptop, and I can facilitate that to give you the access to that TeraGrid. So now they have changed that just recently. It's called Extreme Digital, the database is called XD, and so the computing power is available. So once you are working on obesity or some other programs and you like to do some research, especially for the intervention program, have very good information that what kind of information strategy you should develop, you need some sort of research, and then at that point you need a computing power, and this kind of infrastructure will provide you that. And so this is at the back end, all these things. This is a very rough idea giving to you that this is the interface, and in the middleware, what are the different things that are there? One of the very important thing is the security, you know, because is your health data is more important than your even dollar, because you don't know how that will be utilized. So the security is a very important aspect of the health information. And probably you heard about the HIPAA, and those who are associated, like Ms. Jackson is associated with the school health program, there is another policy called FERPA. But now the ONC as well as the FIN, they are actually going beyond that FIPA and HIPAA. There will be some additional policies that will be in place very soon. And the FIN strategy that they have published, it is still in the draft phase, that you'll be able to know that what the policies are there. So this is the system, of course, provide you the web-based forms called electronic health record system to collect the data on your electronic on your health. And of course, you have to have the authorization and authentication to enter into the system. Once you go there, I don't want to repeat that because I already mentioned that you know how the electronic health record and electronic medical record systems are different. So this will be a little bit overview about how the electronic medical system will look like. That all of your information coming from the different organizations are coming from different states, so whenever, wherever you are moving, will be all integrated that you can actually see. So it doesn't matter whether you are in Illinois or somewhere else, you should be able to open it up and see what kind of data has been generated maybe 10 years ago. Now, when we are talking about the health information, there is a data, right? So the data is you are very much familiar with whenever you go for like X-ray or image of the embolism. But eventually, you have started hearing the term called the pharmacogenomics, the toxicology. At the genetic level. So that means before a medicine is prescribed to you, the doctor will be able to find out that whether that particular dose will be suitable for you. So they will do a kind of screening at the genetic level, and those information also will be a part of your electronic health record. So electronic health record actually will gather a vast amount of data, both text, image, video, and some kind of different data formats that are not normally we see in, for example, YouTube or other kind of infrastructure. And there will be different kinds of devices that will be used, so it doesn't limit you that you have to be near your desktop or laptop to collect the data. You will be able to collect the data, you will be able to see the data from anywhere. And using some kind of smartphone or most of you are started using some kind of tablet, so you'll be actually connected with your data from anywhere. And we are developing some kind of applications based on smartphone, so that you can use the smartphone to access the data and can collect the data also. So the device is not the limiting factor for collecting the data, and that's the trend. So this is the school health program that we are working, and we have the forms that she actually showed you, that how from the physical forms we are going to the electronic forms. So when we are going to the electronic forms, we have to think about the database. That means in a database, the same data should not be everywhere. Data redundancy, we have to remove the data redundancy. So we have to go through that normalization. I don't know how many of you actually heard those terms. So at the end, we have to come up with a strategy that the electronic forms will be available. And depending on the policies, like for example here, we have given some kind of ID, not the actual name for the particular individual. So once you get the data, and especially particularly for doing the research, it will be all aggregated data. The researchers will be able to do that. But you can also go at the granular level. Once you know that your particular individual needs a special care, then of course you have to go to the provider who are sending those data or depositing these, collecting this data. So these are the, when we did that, some data are coming from the clinic, some are coming from the schools. This is the forms, again electronic form, for the immunization record. So you'll be, this is very important that you actually keep the record of your child for the immunization, so that once you go to another state, you should be able to see the what kind of immunization your child has got. This is the health risk analysis form, and we are still working on that, and that's why I showed this one. We are waiting for a particular policy to be involved. As soon as they are, then it will be also available. Now, we are going to a transition in the sense that, well, you know, we have the electronic health record system. You should be able to access and put the data from anywhere using any kind of devices. But what happens, the data that you have already collected, right? It is already sitting in your laptop or desktop. So what we have created, that application programming interface, that form, if it is an electronic medical record, you'll be able to generate a CSV file or similar like Excel, and then you can upload the data into our system. As soon as you upload, we have already created the scripting at the back end for the database, so it will be, the reporting will automatically be available, almost like a So that's what we have done to solve this problem. As she was mentioning, that their health centers are using more than 9 different kinds of electronic medical record system, like GE Centricity, the Cerner, and others, and they are already using. And you know, we have already seen that so much amount of data is already there, but they cannot get the report, especially on the aggregated, or also see the report when they actually leave their, you know, office. So they can upload that data into the system and then can view it, and can also, depending on the authentication, authorization, they will be able to do the other things like the editing. Again, this is coming to the policy, and the ONC and FIN, they are working on that how all those informations, once it is there in the system, can be shared, and how the health information exchange, you all these terminology have already started hearing. And there is a microbiome project I was talking about. In fact, 2 years ago, NIH came with a idea. They realized that the genomic information would be a very important information in our, for our health. So we have created the, it's a, almost like a, more than a dozen genes are been associated with obesity. It's called genome-wide association studies. All these things will be hearing more and more when the electronic medical record system will be in place, that the child's, some, for some reason or the other, and now the cost has gone down. In $1,000 you can get your genomic information, sequence information. May not be at the greater level, but at least some of the, you know, more disease genes you'll be able to see. So those informations also will be there into the system, and we have created that interface. So the gene tested, if the genes are already known, you can actually upload the sequencing data. Sometimes the pharmacogenomics, then toxicologic assay, then the sequence information. Like for example, H1N1, when came in 2009, we realized by sequence analysis that 2009 H1N1 sequence is different from normal influenza flu. And if you have this kind of system, then with the particular individual, you can actually put the sequence, and somebody who has the expertise to do the bioinformatics analysis, they can actually sequence, do the information, and then can differentiate whether it's a H1N1 2009 virus, or it is a normal virus that affects every year in in winter. So that sort of application programming interface also are part of the system. Now, I'm just showing you for those people who know what the database is, that this is a typical ERD, the entity relationship diagram. So I'm actually showing just a part of the database, that how the at the end, the back end of the database is there, and this is just a part. So you can realize that on our health, how many kinds of data are normally generated and how many more data will be generated. So we'll have actually a very good idea over the time that the if you have any child has a particular gene that has recessive or in kinds of dormant, what are the different factors may play to hit that gene and the gene becomes active. So we'll be able to get a better idea about the environmental factors effect on our genes, and our genes and the microbiome's genes, they interplay each other. So we have to have a better factors analyzed to get a better answer. I'm just giving you some idea about that, once you submit the data through the web from anywhere, you can actually see the result. Like, for example, here I'm showing the total number of visits that Ms. Jackson's school health program collected in one particular year. And so there is a spelling mistake, I see, MS Medical. Pardon us. So this is a medical, then mental health, dental, you can actually see and get a very good idea about that how many visits are there, in what categories they are. And there are also another two screenshots I collected from those system by age as well as by race, and you can actually see that how the distribution risk distribution are there among the individuals who actually came and visited her health centers. But the most important thing is you can see the reports from anywhere, anytime. How many of you have that privilege at this point? None? How many of you have the privilege that the data that you have collected, you can see the report from anywhere? But, we have came up with the solution, she can do that. And she can use her any kind of device, like even the iPad, to see the report from anywhere, like from even here. We have also developed that the smartphone system I was showing. You can open it up, input the data, update the data, visualize the data, and you can also send the data and collect the data. And these are some of our works are already published. In fact, this particular one I'm going to present in the next month to Canada to show them in real scenario that how those data are collected. I already have that application program here collected, and you can actually do all those things. And the information about that particular disease. So this interface actually gives the information about what the choice means. Is a childhood obesity informatics system. Now it is not only the height and weight. We are going to collect the information about the mother's health. So we are now calling it My Choice. And eventually it will collect almost like 900 data points or so. So Choice has so many components. One is the electronic health record system, the web-based forms. Of course, the training materials, because now we are going to transition. We have to have our healthcare providers to get the information and be trained how to use the system, how to use the clinical decision support tools. And all those things, you'll be able to do that through the system, but you have to be trained. So those training materials, both in terms of the audio and the video, are available through the system. Now, when it comes to the video, that means you need a bigger place to hold it, and I'll show that how we have developed. Now, Immersive 3D Space, I don't know how many of you are familiar with something called Second Life, you know, Second Life type of things. Some of the information, some of the disease conditions like sexually transmitted disease are very, you know, difficult to, in person-to-person, especially peer-to-peer conversation. So one can enter into the system anonymously and can get the hear the topic, then do the information exchange, you know, talk to each other. So that kind of environment, how much it will be beneficial, we don't know at this point, but we think that that might actually being another dimension for the health prevention as well as the control. And of course it will have the different kinds of tools. I just showed you just one. So this is the integrated tool we are developing. And I have a, you know, graduate student that Jim was mentioning. So that becomes their project for the MS program, and is a capstone project. So I give those projects to them. They work on it, because not only the data that is sitting with your system, but ultimately the data coming from the CDC, from WHO, from NIH, from all those databases, you like to integrate this data to do a meaningful research outcome, right? So we need to have a kind of integrated tool. It's completely web-based. You can select the database, you can select the column and the rows to integrate those data. I was mentioning about that when you collect the videos, you need a bigger, you know, computer space. So this is called data grid. And there is a picture of the data grid. It's a 5 terabyte, but you can actually cluster them together in a network system, so you can collect all those videos. So anywhere, whenever you like to give a training through the video, you should be able to go to the system, click it, and it you can both store it as well as the retrieve it the system. This is the interface we have created for the collecting those data, the video data especially. And I can show you that, you know, one thing we are very much sensitive is about the data that we are collecting in our health centers, because we like to safeguard our data, right? And this system is not for one particular health center or one particular state. We are actually developing the system for thinking about the how it can be used for the researchers. So the researchers may not be located in, you know, it's a confined to one particular state or one particular country. It's from everywhere. So everywhere, whenever you are actually collecting those data, you can actually keep that. And for the research purpose, you can actually make the particular set of data available to the researcher. And this system, I can show you that how the system actually works. Whenever you collect the data, we actually create a metadata. It's a metadata catalog. So metadata catalog, this particular server knows where the data are deposited or collected. And as an user, you don't need to know. But when you send the information that, yes, I need those particular data, it will search to the metadata catalog, bring that information to the actual server, and then actual server will pull out all those data into the system, and you will be able to do the research. You know, it's called the IDARS. We used with the storage resource book as a middleware, so IDARS. So you can see what are the data there. You can view, download, you can modify. And of course, you know, in a training setup, you need some sort of audio video system collaboration. Access GID by the National Science Foundation and the project now running from the NCSA at Illinois, that is available. ICOM is also available. You should be able to do a collaborative environment, make you know, conversation, especially in the telehealth, for example. So these are the features. I'm not going to in details I mentioned about. So the question is, at this point, you are the patient here if I am a patient, I don't know where my data is going. I mean, it's everywhere. And it's the insurance company who is actually have the information sitting on them. They have the control. I don't have the control. As if that I have the dollar in my purse, but the purse is with somebody else, right? But the situation is changing, because by 2014, the electronic health record system will be in place. You know, there's the policy, and so depending on the policy, that the patient will have a better control over his health data. And FIN strategic plan, if you actually read, then you will see that how FIN is working with the ONC to finalize the policy, and that policy will dictate how we can do the information exchange on our health data, how we can access the data, how we can have a better control over our health data. So that policy also will be helping our the strategic plan for better intervention program, which NIH also has come out with a research task force. That's also available, this particular website. And these are all the informations are in our website. That website, I'll again give it to you. So you'll be able to get all those informations for your own. So these are bringing the opportunities for developing better tools, but I like to specifically mention about this particular slide, that how the policy is going to change the way we actually have our data to be exchanged or shared with other organizations. And it has not yet been finalized. So I suggest that those who are in the public health, in one form or the other, please, you can actually go through that one and also participate, because this FIN actually encourages the public also to put their comments to finalize this draft. So once the draft is finalized, once the policy will be in place, then we'll be able to know that what kind of, you know, how we, the information sharing will take place. And I gave you already some architectural framework, that what kind of architectural framework in terms of the informatics should be in place for sharing that information and getting that information from anywhere, any else. So once it is there, then we'll add the patient or the guardian also in the system with the specific roles. So it's a role-based accessibility. Not everybody will be able to see everything. It's a role-based accessibility to see the data and put the data. So with this, I like to stop here and open up the floor for any questions you have.
Not yet. Only if that physical was completed by the school-based health centers will I get it directly into our data. We have allowed various providers in the state of Illinois to develop a means within their practice to populate that form directly from their electronic health record, but we have no mandate in Illinois,
right,
that the doctors export that to,
right,
us. That's ultimately where we hope this will go. We're piloting collecting that data through the school-based health centers, which we have leverage with because we provide funding. So we aren't yet to the population as a whole in Illinois.
But any EMR can use it, and it can go through your HIV.
If they're willing to. Yes, we're in the process of that.
So that
some are further along than others.
So the technology is in place, but the policy is not in place.
Right. How many school-based health centers are there?
There are 59.
So not obviously not every district.
Right. No. Right? Yeah. No. So it was an extension of trying to collect this from the schools, finding that it was very cumbersome, realizing that we would need to go through the physicians. Those medical practices that we had access to were the school health centers, and so then we are in the process of. And then in addition to that, because of my interests, we've expanded to collecting other data from the physician, from the school health center, including that health risk assessment. It is hoped that as we get this fully up and operational, we'll be able to submit a query based on the data elements that exist. For instance, did health risk assessment define the student as at risk for overweight or obesity? What was the BMI related to that student? You know, does it support that assessment? What diagnosis codes also exist in relation to that student? Are they asthmatic? Are they, you know, what other problems do they have? What interventions have been tried in relationship to that? So it'll get, it's really open-ended as far as how we can search on the variables.
So the objective of this particular, you know, the panel is at least twofold. One fold is, if you are experiencing the similar problem that Vicky has, you are always free to talk to Vicky, and we'll make this system available to you to solve your problem. And another aspect, of course, you know, whenever there is a disability is an issue, I have brought Jim. He's an expert in this country, actually internationally known. So Jim will be also able to help you. And it doesn't matter, now we are in the internet age, it doesn't matter where your problem is, you can actually reach out to him, his program, and his system from anywhere.
One thing I wanted to add in relation to your question, as far as the CATCH programs and the physical activities that are related to that, we'll be using the handheld devices in the near future to pilot collecting the height, weight, BMI, and interventions that occur within that setting. Pull in information from the schools about their discipline referrals and try to collect all of that through the handheld device that we can then assess through the database.
Do you like to tell anything specifically to the audience about how your system will be available 24 hours, 7 days in a week, uninterrupted? For them to have the access.
Well, it is now. You know, the system that we have is already there. Yeah, it's 24/7. A lot of opportunity to query the system. You know, we have full-time information specialists sitting there from 9 to 5, where they get your email the next day. We have a web blog, so we get a lot of bloggers who come in. And again, these are people who, if you have a remote interest in disability, you learn so much from the culture of that community. We're looking at developing trails in communities, you know. You know, there's a big incentive now. The more trails you have, the more activity the community gets involved in. And this parent wrote, she's got a child with severe autism, and he runs off of paths into highways and streets. And she said, is there any way of putting up ferns or some kind of barriers, even on a segment of the trail, so she could take him for a walk? You wouldn't get that out of a textbook. And so you're creating the science, but at the same time that you're creating the science, you're having it evaluated by the community of users in this portal in order to make sure that you've got something that has an element of evidence to it and then hopefully be applied. But with disability, you know, the days of running studies separate from the rest of the health promotion world, I think, are gone. I don't think you'll see that. You know, it was a big thing years ago when there wasn't a lot of research on disability, and so they put a lot of money into it. But today we don't have those kind of resources. Today it's got to be adaptation. And you know, I hope even in your country, I'm going to Copenhagen in December to talk about this system. and the University of Southern Denmark or something in the middle of the country, where Hans Christian Andersen was born. That's the only thing I remember about that part of the country. But it's a system that we should use globally for people with disabilities. So that's the only piece here. His the system, I think you've got three pieces here. You've got Miss Jackson's structure. She's in a school system. That's, as you know, how difficult that is to collect data. So here's a prototype. You've got, you know, world-renowned IT guy who came from the IT world, Dr. Dada, who knows how to build this system. And then again, I'm the add-on component, that if there's anything that you have to do with disability, we're there for you 24/7.
What's your contact information on the website that you
use? It's hidden. It's there, but it's hidden. I get so much more. So I could give you a card afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. But I do have to run at 11:30.
Okay. Yeah. 11:30.
Yeah. Are you going to stay, or and I could wait?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Okay.
If you want, you can
no, wait. Okay, we're done. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.